Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Today we're in Dundalk. We're in the lovely and newly refurbished Imperial Hotel. And to begin our show, as we always do, let's have a look at what's making the front page and indeed the business pages of today's papers. I'm delighted to be joined by Louth resident and now Fianna Fáil candidate for Louth, Alison Cumin, joins us. She's from up the road in Drogheda, but she came up all the way to see us here this morning. And David Lynch, former editor of the Dundalk Democrat, also joins us, our local newspaper man. So you're both very welcome to the show. Alison, we might start with you as somebody who might have a bit of inside knowledge on this, but the front page of the Irish Independent is saying that the majority in Fine Gael are expecting a November election in spite of Harris, but Fianna Fáil need to be on side first, we're told. Are you guys on side?
Well, look, I can't speak for the Fine Gael candidates, clearly being a Fianna Fáil candidate. Look, we're all in the dark as much as anything, and me being a first-time candidate as well. I'm just going to stay in my lane, stay focused, because if it's going to happen in November, none of us want to be caught in the hop. We're just full speed ahead in getting the campaign underway.
So what's your definition of full term, Alison? There's an argument here in today's Independent that's saying that if you do your final budget, that could be taken as full term. Well, is that your version of it?
I'm not a constitutional expert, but that said, it sounds pretty good. Yeah. I think if there is a little technicality that will allow us to say, okay, yeah, we're going to full term because we've ticked all the boxes and the budget is underway and all signed off. If that means full term, well, then I can understand how all the rumours about a November, yeah, or certainly sometime around straight after the budget, how those rumours can be coming. And I'm more than happy to go with that, because right now I'm literally making hay while the sun
You're
shines.
You're ready to go.
I'm out on the doors, yeah, and we've got nice bright evenings. I can't imagine any candidate in the country is going to want to either bang doors, it's coming up to Christmas, straight after Christmas in January, February.
No one wants
February.
To see politicians on a cold January evening.
Definitely not, no. And especially out in rural parts. I mean, we've got lots of rural parts here. People have told me, especially, you know, farmers or people in rural houses, we're not going to answer the door after 4 o'clock.
Okay.
So you really, that's putting it up to you.
David, what's your take on all this?
It has to be November.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, I can't see. I was talking to Alison earlier on, and we were kind of just chatting about it, naturally enough. Alison, of course, is keeping it very, very stum about for that. But I just think that when it comes to the business of Dáil Éireann, come December, it's closed, it's finished. And then you're not coming back till the end of January. That gives you, what, February? And then you're looking at, if you're going to go full term, March sometime, or even, as it's saying today, possibly Valentine's Day. I just don't see that happen. I think it's going to come in November. They'll get the bounce off the budget, and it makes much more sense.
Yeah, I see Matt Cooper saying that, you know, basically that everybody is calling November except the one person who has the say in it. Simon Harris put that he'll easily be able to come up with reasons why he had to go with November, because Fianna Fáil wanted it or something else. So he yeah, won't be held, like, they won't, the electorate won't kill him for
not
going
so
early.
No. And like, think about it as well. He has the final say, right? Why would he give any inclination as to when he wants to pull the trigger on this? Why would you give your opposition that lead in? So keep quiet for as long as possible, and then the race starts when he decides.
I love the fact that he says, I don't think people outside the political or media bubble stress about this. I'm, after stepping out of one into the other, so I'm seriously stressed. But at the same time, on the doorsteps, people are going, oh, God, is there going to be an election? It really is. It's not uppermost in the minds of the voters.
Yeah, I think
right
everybody
now
knows it's coming. And, you know, I think most people would prefer to get it over with. I think that's where we're at.
Yeah, I think so. I think, in fairness, with Christmas, there's enough going on with Christmas coming in that you're busy enough as it is. Answering the door every evening to another prospective candidate is probably something that you could do without at that time of year.
No offense, Alison.
Exactly. I know. I'm fully aware of that.
So, Alison, how are you on taking rejection when someone slams a door in your face or something like that?
Everybody's entitled to their opinion,
you just
Bobby.
Keep come back for more.
But that said, the reaction has been absolutely incredible, and that is the one thing that I've noticed. It's very fertile ground here in Louth at the moment. We've got some high-profile high-profile TDs are retiring, etc. We will have a new CEO of Louth County Council. So I think people are really, really fired up for a little bit of change and.
Incidentally, in that pub that I was in last night, the CEO of the current Louth County Council, her retirement due was on.
Ah, lovely.
And I happened to crash in
wishing
and
talk. Coincidence, Bobby.
And I ate some of the sandwiches. There you go.
Do you know, I really wish her all the best. She's been nearly 50 years hard work for Louth and a great singer. Do you know that? I sang in a choir with Ms. Martin, absolutely. So maybe we'll hear her.
There we go. Jack Horgan-Jones is writing today about the aftermath, David, of the Apple ruling. Really, should Ireland be worried about what comes next? And it's quite a good piece. You know, how the government were basically caught flat-footed on this, how the infrastructure issues now are much bigger in the FDI world, and what FDI, like the American Chamber of Commerce, is saying. So there's mood music here that we need to be conscious of.
Yeah, I think the days of Ireland, assuming that because of our corporate tax rate was our beacon to get any kind of large multinationals into the country, well, I think that's gone. I think the really interesting point, and you referred to it there, Bobby, is that the infrastructure is lacking. And I think any large multinational looking at any country that they want to do business in, that's as much an important aspect now as the tax rate. And Ireland are lacking in that. And Ishke Aaron, formerly Irish Water, have come out and kind of said we need to. They need funding. They need lots of funding to get that infrastructure running. So we're kind of looking at the situation more so that the government was caught in the hop in this because they assumed that after so many different rulings that it was going to be pushed out again, and that's not the case. So now there's whatever about the 14 billion that they're going to have to have the terrible task of figuring out what to do with. It's more about the future of FDI investment.
Alison, one of the logical things would be surely to spend the 14 billion on infrastructure and just get on with it.
I completely agree, but anybody who has ever tried to budget, say the household, if you get a little bit of extra money, it's harder to spend because you just don't know where to start. You've got so many debts. But look, I definitely think that the likes of We Are, it's a serious housing crisis. I would have to think a huge amount of that has got to go on housing and infrastructure for those kind of things, because getting that underway and getting that moving, I think, will help in many other areas in the economy.
Yeah, and Horgan-Jones says a very big decision that the government is going to have to take is, are we willing to use this money to address the issues that really in the short term will yield little short-term gain but are essential to the long-term future? So,
well, I think if you've got no roof over your head, I think that is a short-term gain that is definitely worth it. There's no question.
And I guess, you know, you're going to have so many interested parties wanting to know or wanting a slice of that cake as much as anything else.
Yeah.
Or a bite of that apple, to use the awful pun. And that's going to be a very, very difficult job for any government to try and figure out. You know, how do you keep everybody happy that wants some of that for what they see as being important long-term projects for the betterment of the country? So
that's lessons learned, obviously, what has happened and going forward, it just has to make those changes.
Speaking of lessons learned, I hope some lessons have been learned at the University of Limerick. A piece by Helen Bruce in today's Mail, just effectively summarising the waste of money that happened at this university, the appalling lack of governance, the surprise that stamp duty would be paid on a 12 million purchase that no one really budgeted for. This is a legacy of absolute. It's a disgrace.
It's extraordinary. And I was just saying that to Alison earlier that, you know, any time you have heard of University of Limerick in the last number of years, it is extraordinary how it's usually a negative issue that comes up. It's usually something to do with management issue that wasn't dealt with, by the sounds of it, in a manner that is befitting of an institute of its scale. And, you know, you have sums of money there that any other college, university, institute in this country would be crying out for. And that it's just an appalling use of money.
Alison?
For such incredibly clever academic people. I think botched is probably the good word. I've read through as much as I can, and I can't see that it was deliberate in any way. There was nothing underhanded. It really was just serious mismanagement. The due diligence wasn't done. And we're just talking about housing crisis. The student accommodation crisis in this country is beyond belief. Yeah. And to see that that amount of money was wasted and it's just gone. There's no clawing back on that.
Yeah.
Really is.
And the
horrendous.
Fact that the two serious misappropriations, as they are, happened like quite a distance apart, that there was no learning in the second one from the first one.
Yeah, the Honan's Quay debacle, which should have been straight away kind of a red flag for everybody concerned. And it sounds like the lessons weren't learned from that at all.
Yeah.
And we're back in this situation with UL, one of the foremost universities in the country.
And you would hope it wouldn't impinge on other universities or other institutions funding then going forward as well.
And the oversight, you know, I think that's probably part of a question that has to be asked about this, even from a bigger governmental level. The oversight on UL, which was supposed to have been, you know, in place from previous debacles, again, this is happening again. Where is the oversight?
All right, let's quickly have a look across stateside. Ryan Coogan is telling us in today's Indo that the ex-president is not equipped to deal with truth, lies, or all that he has. Alison, I don't know if you watched the debate, the cats, the dogs, Taylor Swift now coming in behind Kamala Harris.
It was like amazing episode of Dynasty from the 1980s.
Are you enjoying the whole thing? You
I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And at least they definitely have their date picked for their election, so we can just sit back and relax and enjoy it. I didn't watch it live, but I watched all the potted highlights the next day. And to think that Trump came out going a little bit by like Prince Andrew, I think that went rather well. It's just incredible because, yes, people eating their pets and, babies being exterminated after they were born, etc. He's taking fact-checking to an entire new level.
Yeah.
And I just think, I'm not sure that Kamala Harris landed as many or made as many gains as she should off the back of some of his absolute outrageous statements. But I think probably at the moment to hold her own and then you have Taylor Swift coming out. Heavens, that was incredible. I would have thought she would have waited a little bit later, but she obviously felt the time was right. And what a mature and well thought out.
It seemed like it was her initiative as well, rather than something that was
preordained or anything.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I think that makes it all the more powerful.
And it was. I thought it was a very mature and measured statement. It wasn't straight out of
no. And I had a bit of humour about it with the cat lady, you know, to link back in with what Trump had said. So, like, you know, it sounds like from Taylor Swift's point of view, she knows what's going on politically, you know, and that's going to be a big benefit maybe for voters, young voters, but getting young voters out, as we know in this country as anywhere else, is the biggest thing. Getting
that's
them
exactly
registered,
it, yeah.
Getting them out on the day, that's the big thing. And, you know, it's no harm having Taylor Swift on your side.
And I'd love to have been in the room when J.D. Vance saw that drop.
David, while I have you there, Britain once again delays Brexit border regulations. As somebody, and we are in Dundalk, it is a border, it's a border town. It has all the the knowledge around what these border checks entail. And so what do you make about this where these checks have been delayed again? It probably suits everybody, does it?
I think so. I think, is it not much better just to be as we are, as we have been? Any change...
Drive on, as the fellow says.
And change, you know, people say change is a good thing. I think change can be a bad thing when it comes to cross-border and cross-border trade and regulation. I think everybody would be much kind of happier if we could just keep pushing it out further and further. I also think there is an element with Brexit that there's Brexit fatigue as well. This has been going on since 2016. It's 8 years of fearing the worst, thinking the worst is going to happen. And then, you know, we've got a new government in the UK now. They're obviously going to need more time to review this. And it says that in the piece today. And obviously they'll have to kind of get some kind of an idea of what they can do. And I think a Labour government was always more pro-Europe than the Tories, so why wouldn't they want to kind of have a better relationship going forward?
Yeah, no, I think I absolutely agree with you. Alison, some worrying news as reported by The Currency, reported in today's Irish Independent, around PressUp and its financial state. It appears all is not well there.
I know, and it's desperately sad to see something like this. And it's only when you have, in John Byrne's article here, the list of their portfolio. It's just some of the most iconic buildings in Ireland. And
I
some
think
of the most
at
iconic
one stage,
boom buildings.
Yeah, really. At one stage, I think they had 75 to 80 freehold properties in their estate.
Yeah, you look at the Clarence Hotel, the Workman's Club, the Stella Cinema, the Elephant and Castle. They're so, you know, we probably look at them as signs of the good times, but then if you scratch the surface, you see just how they do seem to be in dire straits, and
so,
you'd have to hope that they can still continue in some shape, manner or form.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see what happens there. The Currency are reporting that Paddy McKillen Jr. and Matt Ryan, the former schoolmates who helped transform Dublin nightlife after the financial crash in 2009, are no longer directing day-to-day operations.
And you always have to read between the lines when you see step back rather than step down, I suppose. Yeah. It's maybe we'll find out just what their control is still.
We're going to be talking a little bit about retail a bit later on, David, but Brown Thomas are warming to sustainable bag chargers. Now, I'm not so sure if I went in there and dropped $5,000 and somebody asked me for 60 cents for the bag, that I'd be that happy about it. But their CEO is saying it's no problem.
Yeah, I wouldn't be, surprisingly, their biggest customer myself. But like, you know what, I'm reading this, and the Brian Thomas chief, the brilliantly named Donald McDonald, suggesting that this 60 cent will go towards reforestation and eco-sustainability elements. And, you know, like, you go into any other shop now at the moment and you ask for a bag, you're going to be charged for it. And sometimes, and it actually mentions it in the Cantillon piece, you know, it could be over €1, €1.50. It could be charged
for a paper bag.
For a paper bag, yeah. Exactly. So it's not even a reusable bag. What you could, of course, use it, but the fact that it's 60 cent, I don't know about you, but I'm not that bothered about.
Well, I know Alison Cumming is a regular in Brown Thomas.
Oh, listen, do you know what?
She's going to be bothered by it.
Literally, I'm now down to nipping into Brown Thomas to use the loo. So if they start charging me to use the loo in Brown Thomas, I'm in big trouble.
They'll give them ideas.
All right, well, we'll leave it there. Thank you for a great local review of the papers from Alison Cumming and David Lynch. Thanks, guys.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.